because we do have quorum. Okay, no public comments. So we'll move into new business, presentation, discussion of by FFA President Gabby Schultz.
Hello, everyone. My name is Gabby Schultz. I've gotten to meet a couple of you. So I have a little presentation right here, and we'll see what works best for y'all to see it from the slides. If I stand up here, are we good, or should we pass it around?
You might have to get a little bit closer.
Show it to them first.
Yeah, just let.
This way, and then I'll kind of like rotate as I go.
That's perfect.
Okay, so first I'll start up a little introduction, Master Gardener. Like I said, my name is Gabby Schultz. I'm a high school student at Aledo. I'm enrolled in the FFA program, and I'm called something called the Ford Leadership Scholar Program. That's part of the Texas FFA. So what I did to get here, my junior year, I read a book called Daring Greatly by Dr. Brené Brown. If y'all ever heard of her, she's great. And about 260 Texas students up in the state applied to this program their junior year, and 24 were selected to move on to Austin, Texas, to be interviewed. From there, 24 were selected, and then from there, the 10 were selected. So there's about 10 of us in the Board Scholar Program all across the state. I am actually not the only Aledo student. My other friend, Dylan Sweat, is also from Aledo, and he's also a Board Scholar. So that's pretty cool that two from the Aledo or the local Parker County community got selected, because that's pretty rare. It's a pretty hard program to be a part of, but I'm extremely grateful. So going into kind of what the Ford Scholarship Program is, I know it's kind of hard to read, but I'm going to give you an outline or a summary of what it is. This is actually the 10 of us. During the summer, after we were selected, we went into a week of training, a leadership training, a pretty intense leadership training, actually. We were up from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m. most days, doing business presentations, speaking in front of people, learning how to handle financial and money tavern. That is part of my job for this, is I create a project and I go into the community, identify a need, create a capstone project, and then sponsor for it. While I may have the idea, I don't want to just leave the ideas with y'all and then leave. My job is to also sponsor for it and make sure the job does get done. So that week of training, we just kind of learned how to do the business presentations, how to speak in front of others, identify that need. Also to add on of how I identified said need, I actually created a survey about a month ago. I know some of y'all saw it. It was all over Aledo and even the Willow Park Facebooks, and I had over about 100 responses now. And I had a list of priorities where they ranked about 8 priorities, and as a Ford Scholars, we've learned to keep our mind open. One of my original ideas is actually a splash pad. That's not going to turn out, that's all right. And then I had some other ideas, and here we are. So I'm very open-minded when it comes to change and new ideas and creating new needs and new what our community needs and meeting those needs in that way. So I had that survey, and the reason I am still here about talking about doing the parks and rec for it is because one of the biggest needs was people, like in my comment box in this survey, talking about how they would like a bigger area for their students, for their kids, whoever, to gather outside for more of an outdoor education aspect. I had about over 64 responses all revolving around that for just those comments. So that's kind of what the Ford Scholars is. Moving on to kind of what I'm here for in general, I had an awesome opportunity and chance to speak to Ms. Young and Ms. White at the Master Gardening Program. I think that's the coolest program ever. I grew up in agriculture. I've grown up with having gardens around, helping with that. I'm also enrolled in several agricultural science classes and have been for the past 5 years now. So I've taken horticultural sciences and floral design classes. So it's always been kind of a passion of mine. I get to see that in my community. And getting to talk to them, we talked about some of the things that they would like to see updates change, and then some of the aspects that I talked about when it comes to outdoor education and meeting what the community kind of wanted or wanted to see from that survey, or just as a student seeing what it would need in here. So just as some of the updates we talked about, flagstone getting laid down. That's, I think they already have that planned out. I actually have already talked to my group in the FFA, and I have several people who are also willing to come out and help volunteer and getting that laid down to make sure that happens. So that's just kind of one of the things. New seating. Ms. Young and I also talked about the dimensions and what this would look like for. So we're still working on that, but this is just some picture ideas right here. So hopefully I can move it around a little bit, get a little bit closer. Those are just some ideas, not the exact layout. Fencing replaced, there was a terrace that needed to be around the place, and then fencing in there, just making sure it's not falling down completely and for them. And then we talked about the sign getting moved to more of an area where it's more visual. People who are driving by can see it, so that's another idea, just moving it up and seeing that when you drive into this little park area, you can see it there. Because we talked about how a lot of newcomers have been coming and wanting to see that, and how that can bring in new people, new students, and new people to the park. So some of the new ideas that we had are kind of building on the garden, is the butterfly garden aspect of adding more on to that. That kind of ties into the education aspect. So free little libraries and educational label signs. I'm sure y'all have seen the free little library at the Bearcat Park or just around the park area. They're actually not that hard to get in within a certain area, or have even donated by that company. It's also pretty easy to get books inside, so talking of that, and once we get further into this, talking of them about that company, the Free Little Library Company. So wherever that might be, that's just the one idea, the outdoor education aspect. And then having educational label signs and then QR codes. We'll get to the QR code next. But I know it's kind of hard to see, I'm just gonna move around. But they're, like, if you ever see them into a state park or a local park, I don't know, some certain ones. I grew up going to like the state park. I've been to the ones up north and then the ones here in Texas. So that was always kind of a big thing for my family. And they always have like little signs in front of certain plants or certain areas of land that describe, this is what happened here, or this is what goes on in this area, and that's why it goes on. So I think that would be really cool to add on to the aspect of having those kids come in. I mean, even we were having that conversation that day in the park, it's all about like three groups of children coming through, and that adds on like an extra 30 minutes for kids to do something and for their parents to let them go and learn something more. Being in the horticultural classes, we learn a lot about how important it is to educate the future of agriculture, because you're kind of looking at it right now. We are the future, and I think it's very important to educate them on the aspect of what they're looking. So moving on to the butterfly garden, just a little bit more elaborate. So they already have some plants there for that. It's a very much low cost thing, just adding on new plants and making sure they're maintained. So this is just some ideas that could already be added in the plants. We already have some of them, and it's providing more and providing that more education aspect. We also talked about labeling some of the plants in front instead of just having that big signs. We also have like the little signs that describe this is like a milkweed or whatever that plant that is, so that the kids can read it. So this gets on to a little bit of a harder part. So I just kind of created an example of the QR code. If you have your phone on you, you're more than welcome to scan it. I can kind of do it online by. What I created was just a little idea or an example of a curriculum. You're more than welcome to. If not, it's okay. This just kind of shows what the QR code would be and what it would be on the sign. As I said, I just created an example. So when we get closer into the project and creating those signs, I would be a little bit more elaborate. My horticultural science teacher has been very willing to help with this since she does teach this. And as I said, this is just an example of like what the kids could read. Having examples of like the different plants and why they're there, fun facts about butterflies. This just, as I said, adds on an extra 30 minutes for parents to let their kids go and learn something. So when you come back from the park, it's they have something new that they retain. I think that's really cool. So going on to just a little bit of a timeline. So as I talked about earlier, this is kind of hard to see again. July, we had my training for the Ford Scholars. August, we started brainstorming. September, reach out to community members, and we're here in November. So I have about a 9-month timeline when it comes to this, because I am a senior in the class of 2022. And the idea of this is the capstone project. So I would create it throughout about the 9 months that I have. And then once I have graduated, it is there for the community to use and is there to be maintained or however that looks like. So I would start, obviously, here in November discussing this with y'all. If time moves on, we all agree with this and move on to December, start discussing the plan and reaching out to sponsors. The sponsor would be more of my job. I would reach out to local community members and people around for sponsoring the said things. January, I'm planting the new signs and updating the garden area. February, begin placing new seating and finishing updates. March. So this is another new idea that my teacher and I kind of thought about too. This is just an idea. We don't have to really build on it, but there's a thing that we do within Aledo called Books in the Barnyard. It actually made national news, so y'all may have heard of it, I'm not sure. But I was actually on the committee that put it together. We brought in our local Coder Elementary students to the high school, and we had a day where about kindergarten through second grade, went through a whole entire curriculum of being able to read through our livestock animals. We just had the babies in, so we had babies, lambs and calves and pigs, and they got to read to them. They went to a next station, got to plant their own plant for the horticulture aspect. Just kind of like a new thing to intrigue them into agriculture. So we talked about possibly for this project, just to kind of like get it a kickoff start. I know we already have a young master gardening program, so we can maybe work with them. This is in the near future, so we still have some time to plan this out. But talking about Future Gardeners Day, bringing in maybe some of the elementaries and advertising this to the local parents around and saying to bring them in and teach them about the garden, what they'll be doing here. I know a lot in ag, we talk about soil conservation, water conservation. There's many different aspects and ways we could go about this. And I think this would be really cool to bring in locals to our community and really show them the beautiful garden that the master gardeners have been putting together. So in April, finish all updates and new items. May, they kind of did things with the Ford Scholar. I do have a group of Ford Scholars and we all support each other. So we kind of have like a grand opening for each project. Obviously it doesn't have to be too elaborate, but just kind of a what is new and bringing them to that. So they're visiting that and then inviting the local community within. And then June project is 100% completed because that would be my graduation date. And then last thing, this was just a little fun. I'll go show y'all who play a role in this. So the FLS is the Ford Leadership Scholar. I'm Gabby Schultz, that would be me. The Willow Park community, being able to identify a need and community needs. Members of the park benefiting from the project. Willow Park City Government, so y'all also play a huge important role in this, allowing the project and the support to happen. The Master Gardener team, an awesome part of our role, support and guidance on what needs to be provided and allowing the project. And then finally, the sponsors for funding the project. So I believe that is it. I know that was a lot of information at once, so I'm totally open to questions and here to talk. So,
you did a great job.
Excited too, and one of my biggest things I always try to say is I know I threw a lot of ideas at y'all, and I'm not just throwing ideas and then leaving. I'm here for fundraising and sponsoring too. I want to make it happen, therefore I will go out into the community and find those sponsors and to make it happen and make sure it happens. So,
well, awesome. I think one of our next steps is just to meet again and start working on that next phase of what we're doing. I know we have on our agenda, I'll just say, we're talking at City Council tomorrow night about parks funding, potentially being able to fund some things, so that might be able to work with some of the sponsorships that funding that she would be able to do. So I'm very excited. I think it's a great time for us to get going after our phase one of that park, and so very excited to have Gabby come and participate. So
I'm very thankful for y'all allowing
me to come. If you have any questions for her,
where was the flagstone that you mentioned?
The flagstone, we actually talked about that last time we met. I believe they've already ordered that. So
yeah, well, our idea was, we have these two very large beds at the demonstration garden. And one of the issues we have is soil compaction. And so we were thinking about putting some paths through the beds using the flagstone. And Gabby was talking about being able to provide some of the labor, because oftentimes some of the high school kids are looking for community projects to earn credits, and so we could use them, because many master gardeners are retired, and we're just a little too old to be lifting up flagstones and putting them in place. So anyway, my idea is to sort of do a leaf pattern through the beds, and these would be paths that people could get on and look at the signs that we're going to be putting up. It would be a little bit closer instead of walking through the beds.
So it would only be for pedestrian access?
Yes, it would only be
kind
pedestrian.
Kind of a stepping stone type layout.
The reason I ask is I'm thinking of a maintenance consideration, not so much the initial stuff. Weatherford did that And if you don't, if you're not careful, you get these stones, you know, differentially settling. You definitely don't want them where a cyclist can ride across them unless you're going to guarantee maintenance. But in Weatherford, they were pretty good at that, and it is bad over there to ride a bike through, or, you know, even a kid, but maybe for pedestrian access. But I still don't think you want too much settlement, because then somebody, you know.
Well, it's a stepping stone. It's not a flagstone path, as if it's a walkway that we have around it. It is simply when you are stepping, instead of stepping in the mulch.
Yeah.
You know, you're like stepping stones to keep from having all the foots going everywhere.
But that is an issue, a concern that probably needs to be addressed, is the city's liability should somebody.
Yeah, I was thinking, I mean, that is true.
You know, lose their balance and fall over.
I didn't want anybody to fall over regardless of liability.
And this is.
As long as bikes are not in there, it's probably not as big of a deal.
No, we, well, as far as I know, there will, none of the bypass go through the gardens, do they?
No. And there's, you have the decomposed granite type areas of pathways on the outside of the beds. That's where you get the walking foot traffic and the bikes, if there might be a small child on the bike, but not in the beds. And actually, that might be a good point.
You could create other signs.
Yes, don't ride vehicles through our gardens. It's to kind of make the garden, the plants, more accessible within the very large beds.
Yeah. My thought is to actually take the flagstone and then sort of put it into the mulch, settle it into the mulch. And they tend to be quite secure. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about flagstones that are at least this big, something comparable to step in. With maybe a foot between them or something.
And that's going to have to help also with weeding. That just gives you one extra spot that weeds can't come up through.
Absolutely.
The mulch in between.
Absolutely.
So,
And that is a major issue we have, because we only meet twice a month, and it can get pretty weedy.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Any questions?
You mentioned the splash pad up at the very beginning.
Yes, that was the original idea.
I've got five grandchildren who love a splash pad, so I'm just
That was the first reason we started it. So as Ford Scholars, we were taught to keep our minds very open. And when we first started in August, and I first started brainstorming, my ag teacher and I sat down, and I happen to be very involved in the community. I actually also work at Grounds for Hounds, the vet clinic. So I'm here in Willow Park a lot, I'm here in Aledo, and I've heard a lot of people talk about their children wanting having a splash pad, or even the local social media is talking about a splash pad. So that's when I sent out the survey, and it was actually one of the lowest ranked on the survey, surprisingly. They talked a lot more about another thing that I had was like a dog park and the library updated, all of that up in the Aledo community too. So those were some of the higher ones, but it was more so the comments that I got that drew me towards here, because they talked about outdoor education. And the splash pad, I think Mr. Bill and I actually had a couple conversations about it. It would take several phases. I only have 9 months, and as much as I would love a splash pad, it would take maybe about 9 years to get that. So I'm not exactly sure if I could have gone that path. I'm still a high school student, so still doing my best, but I think it's a great idea. I hope to see it one day for here, but I think there's some time for that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
We'll get in touch soon and set up a time to keep moving on the project.
All right, thank you all so much.
I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me.
Thank you once again. I'm sure we'll meet soon.
August of 2015, and that preliminary plat indicated that Lot 5, Block A was to be regulated to park use and proposed as a drainage easement in its entirety. Now, in the planning process, there's a preliminary plat which has a general layout of all the lots in the subdivision. And then that's a general layout. You come back later with a final plat, which is actually the document that is approved by council, signed and recorded, and from that, lots are sold in the subdivision. As I said, the preliminary plat was approved August 11th of 2015. In January of 2016, a developer's agreement was approved by, or considered by council, and there were four aspects within that developer's agreement, the fourth one being a land swap in lieu of developing the on-site park area. And the developer was offering to give the city the site south of Trinity Meadows Parkway along King's Gate, which is approximately 3.5 to 4 acre tract. And the council concurred with that swap. So therefore, Lot 5 in Block A was approved to be developable land. In other words, if there was a replat that was approved, that allowed for those lots to be lots in which homes were built. The final plat was approved along with the developer's agreement on March 15th of 2016. And that final plat did allow for Lot 5, Block A to be developed for single family residents with the 3.5 to 4 acre tract in lieu of that lot. And that final plat, as I said, was approved on March the 15th of 2016 and was recorded along with the developer's agreement. I gave you in your packet, along with the chronology, just a copy of the preliminary plat which showed the original Lot 5. It's highlighted in yellow. Oh, yours is black and white. Mine's highlighted in yellow. But anyway, it is in the... Lot 5 is in what I would call the southwest corner of the subdivision. And I would be happy to answer any questions you have, but with the council's action on that final plat, they did accept, through the developer's agreement, the 3.5 to 4 acre tract in lieu of this Lot 5. So that's what was in phase one of the Meadows Place subdivision. That's what the council agreed to and record, and that's what was recorded. Now, in Meadows Place phase two, which is the new part of the development, there was a trail easement is dedicated. It would be between Meadows Place phase one and phase two along the creek area. It will be considered for development as trail. And in fact, you probably, I don't know if you walk in that area or look in that area, but you can probably see there were some survey stakes that were put up to delineate the trail easement, so the homes that are being constructed along there could construct their fences where the trail would remain outside.
Very good, thank you.
Did y'all have any questions for Betty?
Well, it sounded favorable to me because they got more space. I mean, in that aspect, they swapped, which sounded reasonable. I mean, it sounded better than just sort of swiping it, taking it away. So it was right. It was actually, and it was a, it sounded like it was a favorable trade because of the, in, at least in terms of greater area.
And the city still owns that piece of property.
Yes.
Nothing's been done with that.
Which piece?
The 3.5 to 4 acre.
Right. It is located, if you're at the intersection of Meadows Place Drive and Kingsgate, it would be on the southeast corner.
You know, the only thing I thought it might be, because it sounded kind of alarming to hear things from the last meeting, it might be educational to get that information out or at least make it available to the residents there. Santa came and told told us about things. And so, you know, it might make them feel better that there was something done that, you know, wasn't just removed.
May I ask a question? Would you all speak to the actual ordinance that's in the R5 zoning?
Well, the ordinance that we're gonna be discussing, the parkland dedication ordinance next.
No, I mean, in the R5 zoning ordinance, it says that there's to be green space dedicated inside the walls. So that's what you're gonna talk about next?
That's what we're talking about, that particular ordinance.
Of course, if the, you know, when the council executed their developers agreement, it is within the council's purview if they choose to accept an alternate, I mean, as a part of the developers agreement. In other words, normally when you execute a developers agreement, there can be several things that the council can negotiate with the developer that may not, you know, may not be exactly what
the ordinance says.
The R5 says, yes, that is. The R5 is the zoning guidelines. The subdivision ordinance of which the parkland dedication is a separate document. Remember, the subdivision ordinance allows for the dividing of an undeveloped tract of land. The zoning will stipulate criteria for each specific lot within that.
Thank you. So it's like the Pirates of the Caribbean. The rule of the pirates, and they always say, well, it's more like guidelines. So it's more like a guideline than an actual rule.
There is some give and take, there is flexibility, so that supersedes.
Thank you.
Right, and you, they have the ability to create an agreement that they all understood. So that, and that was what the council did by accepting that developer's agreement. So.
Would someone also speak to the fact that portion of land, that 4 acres, at the same time was being considered for the new water sewer treatment plant? And that it was suggested that that's why the trade was made, because they wanted, that was a potential place for the new water sewer treatment plant.
I'm not aware of that. I wasn't around. I've only heard that it was potentially for an upgrade to the lift station, that it was to, that's
well, again, that part of the water sewer treatment.
Yeah, it would, yes, but that it's already adjacent to, so.
Actual treatment plant now.
Not the treatment. That's what all I've heard plant. Is that if you upgraded and did a subsurface lift station,
which
that
is an
existing
list.
Right,
station.
Exactly.
So is that hole? Is that the problem?
Yeah, it's the
that's
hole.
That's what I call it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that will have to be filled in order to become a park, or?
To be developed to be a park. Yeah.
And it's not in the master park schedule, right? We didn't include that in the master park schedule.
I don't believe it is.
I don't think it was either.
It's not. I looked at
it. You know it's not. It is not.
Well, I just felt better that they at least considered it. They made a swap. I didn't know about all the details necessarily, but that they got more as opposed to the same amount or less in the swap. So those aspects at least sounded encouraging.
Yes, thank you, Betty, for putting together that chronology.
All right, move on to item C.
Yeah, last month we had talked about some adjustments and amendments to the subdivision ordinance as it relates to public space dedication. I think we had talked about that probably in conjunction with Meadows Place. I had included, I'll highlight the major changes that we're proposing to the ordinance. Now, these changes you'll need to go, because it's the subdivision ordinance, these changes will go to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration. They will make a recommendation to the council, and then the city council will actually consider if they want to amend the subdivision ordinance with respect to these public space dedications. That will be the procedure. Under the general requirements, some subdivisions are fairly small.
In other words, we recently had a six-lot subdivision, about 7 acres. Normally, those subdivisions are so small that there's really not space for a park, and you know, it would be such a small park. So the city will, in areas like that, the city will always accept fee in lieu of parkland dedication. The only, and it states so now, that we would not accept such a small tract. Now, the council would have the flexibility if there was a larger area adjacent to a small subdivision. We would still leave the flexibility for the council if a small portion of this subdivision had land that they could accept. So we always want to word these where you can negotiate if you have a park that is shown on your Parks and Trails Master Plan or even in your comprehensive plan. So we're proposing that change. We're also adding that after a final plat is filed, if the properties are replatted and there are additional lots, then we will always accept the fee in lieu of. We wouldn't say you added 3 or 4 lots, you re-subdivided some property. We would always accept the fee in lieu of.
You're saying rather than forcing them to add land to it.
Okay. Right.
And
also, when there is a private park that is designated by the developer within a residential area and it is shown on the final plat, in other words, it's a private park, it's a park within a private subdivision, and there is, you know, the HOA, they would be required to improve and also maintain that park within that subdivision. So that HOA will maintain that park into perpetuity. In other words, it would stay with the HOA since it is developed by them, and that does count for their dedication. But it would be private, and it would be maintained, built and maintained by the HOA or that subdivision. And this ordinance did permit it already. It just did not have the security of the maintenance of it. So, in other words, the city, you know, say 20, 30 years down the road, the city would not want to accept maybe a park area that was not maintained. And we're also talked about the payment in lieu of land, and also right now it talks about the fee, and it actually has the fee for that payment. And you normally don't, in your ordinance, want to put the amount of the fee. You want to reference your city's fee schedule so you don't have to amend the ordinance every time you update the fees. And I think we will let the council look at, as they do with all the other fees annually, we'll let them look at that, and then that way they could adjust those fees based on, you know, current conditions. So that is one change. And then also we talk about the land that is shown on the comprehensive plan or the Parks and Trails Master Plan. Those park areas that are designated in those two documents will be our guide for accepting dedication of land and park area within a subdivision. And then, of course, the money will go to a special fund, or it's basically set aside when we receive the fees in lieu of. And that will remain with the city. There was it's kind of unusual, I've never seen this before, but we're proposing that it be changed. It said after 3.5 years that the city would, you know, give the money back if it wasn't used. Well, normally the city keeps it because there might be an opportunity 4 years down the road to either acquire parkland or make improvements to existing parks, and we want to be able to maintain that fee that was paid in lieu of a developer putting in parkland. We want to maintain that. So that is the last really change or addition that is going to be proposed to the Planning and Zoning Commission and Council. We wanted to make the park more aware of those changes as they will strengthen, I think, the ordinance with regard to that.
Back in 2016, when they finalized this, what was the fee paid, the fee swap?
There was no fee swap.
They just swapped land. The developer didn't have to pay a fee in addition to swapping the land?
No, the developer gave the 4 acres, and that served as his parkland dedication.
Okay.
In instead of the acre and a half that was proposed.
Just a question, if the homeowners association has to maintain this, is, I'm just wondering what the risk is of it going away. What if they just stop? I mean, if the whole intent is to set aside a space for that use, is there much of a risk that the homeowners association, after a couple of years, gets tired of it? Enthusiastic people, their kids grow up and it just falls into total disrepair and.
Normally, there are provisions in the HOA. You know, a lot of cities, I will tell you, in their, most cities, when they do private development like that, where there is an HOA, they will normally have a developer's agreement with that subdivider regarding not only just park maintenance, but, you know, it can be parks, it can be stormwater drainage, it can be streets, it can be even water and sewer lines in some cases.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about the drainage and other stuff, because you're gonna get sued if you don't do your stuff on those.
Well, and fences are the world's worst.
Yeah, so, but the parks, I'm not really familiar with what happens if you fail to, if you block drainage ways and you flood somebody, you'll be in court more than likely, or settle out of court. But if you do something on the parks and don't do what you said you were going to do, what then? Because you haven't really, what damage, I mean, that, you know.
I have seen it on the drainage side. I've seen it where it's maintenance of actually drainage structures, not so much blocking. It's over time, you know, especially if there's a storm sewer, you know, you may have erosion around the concrete, flumes and all, and, you know, you can, cities have the ability, you know, if it is not, it becomes a health and safety hazard like that. Cities do have the ability to go in and then obviously
for drainage.
Homeowner association. Well, same is true with fencing. You know, you hope you don't ever get to it.
Sure, sure.
Well, so I guess I have a question to ask. Like, you're, let's say it's a swing set, mm-hmm. and it becomes a hazard, and the homeowners association mm-hmm. is just saying, forget it, we're not. Then the city could come in and just require them to remove it and say the hazard's gone.
Right, and the hazard's gone. You know. Now, like I said, you may have sure. less of an amenity
right.
of a park.
Right.
But you know, normally it's mowing and maintenance more right. so.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm not an attorney, don't want to be an attorney, but, you know, if the city had to maintain it, then I think they would go back and assess the HOA.
I don't know the answer. I'm just curious. Maybe it's something that might need to come back to later to
right.
say these are the likely scenarios or whatever it is. The idea was you set it aside, and there is a possibility of the person, the entity that's supposed to take care of it, just not doing it. So it sort of defeats the purpose of that whole concept to begin with. Versus the city has a park, I think the chances are much smaller that it's just going to totally, anything's possible, but that it's going to totally fall into it.
But one thing to remember, if it's an HOA park, it is private, and it can only be accessed by members of the HOA.
Right.
So
yeah.
The city yeah. citizens.
Yes, and that's exactly
that's
what
this
says. Yeah. Yes,
right.
Yes, it is
and
not
don't
public.
Don't forget, HOAs are controlled under the
state
taxes
yeah.
as well, and then HOAs are covered under the local government code. Now, I'm not specific about parks, because I've never had to deal with anything like that, but the state law is going to rule in this on those
yeah.
situations.
Yeah.
That was some of the question I had about when you said private, if that's,
yes.
you know, and you answer that with it, you know, being a private.
Right.
So it kind of goes into, you know, the money that is collected for that developer to say, okay, I'll
right.
just build a park. Is there going to be any way that that money is funneled to the Parks Department? I mean, instead of just a general fund for the city? Because that's kind of, you know.
The way it is set up and the way most are set up, the funds that go into the park development fees are normally for acquisition of land and/or improvements to parks. Normally, general maintenance is budgeted through the
city.
Through the city.
So it doesn't go in straight into the general fund without restrictions?
No.
Can't pay for a police officer?
Yeah.
Right, it has restrictions.
Right.
And do we know who is suggesting to the council for the amount for development? Is that something that we as a park board can discuss and then present to the council? You know, I know we talked about different cities charge different pricing, and, you know, it's all depends on which city you look at, how much they charge for.
Normally, council will ask, you know, what other cities are doing, and then they, I think, hopefully, council will look at what they need to do. And, you know, as far as park land acquisition and park development, and then hopefully they look at, you know, at something that will work for the developers as well as for the city.
Yeah, I think as a council member, what you would look at is you direct staff to provide that information. Can you survey Weatherford, Aledo, local cities, see what those are, bring those to me, just like we would, like we try to do with a water rate study. It's far simpler, you know, but that same concept of bring me that information, and then we can talk about what your recommendations are.
But hopefully it would allow for council to look at it each year when they're working on the budget. And, you know, if they see the need, then, you know, the fees can be adjusted accordingly.
Right.
It's just, this will get it out of the ordinance, so you don't have to go back and amend the ordinance, which, you know, takes some time each.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Item D.
Yes.
Update discussion regarding Trails Master Plan.
That's Tony.
Hi, everyone, I'm Tony. I've actually met, sorry, my rushing, not having agendas ready. I made copies for you of the trail map that Larry Colvin, who is the president of the Weatherford Mountain Bike Club, made for us. He does this in his sleep, so this is embryonic, not even really conception stage at this point, so don't get too excited or not about it yet. This was going to the Squaw Creek Golf Club and going through there on the top of the dam, and you can see the yellow section is what he's looking at designing. That's what he would like to do with it. So we haven't even met with Squaw Creek yet to find out if this is even a possibility. So as I said, this is barely conception.
So this was, we had talked over the last couple of years, you know, about this piece of property and what we could do with it. And we said one of the first things we needed was a conceptual idea of what this could be. And as Tony said, lo and behold, there's a guy that lives near us that does trails for Parks of Aledo. He's working out at Mineral Wells, does it in his sleep, and said, sure, I'll come up with a conceptual plan. So this is what we take to talk to Squaw Creek and say, here's a possibility of what this property could be used for. And so that's where we are. It's just the idea, this is what it is, and we meet with them next week to see what their thoughts are, because we don't own this property. We have to ask, what would they like to do this? Would they like to keep ownership and see it happen? Would they like for the city to do something? So, like I said, as Tony said, very conceptual concept.
And that white line is the perimeter, 33 acres.
Yeah, that's the perimeter, that's the fence lines, essentially, so.
Property line, that's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly, so. So yeah, that's some great ideas. I think Tony and Bill and I had a chance to walk up on the dam and kind of look out over the property and back towards the golf course and over the reservoir to see how it could be just a really phenomenal project. And very much the Weatherford, and I assume at some point if it progresses, we would have Larry come in, but they take over. They actually even help with the fundraising. It's the international Mountain Bike Club, IMBC. And IMBA, and they actually have their 501c3 status so that they can take funds that you can use as a a tax deduction and then funnel them to specific projects within cities. So it means that it can kind of be independent of the city if need be. So just some interesting things we've learned about how it works, because we, any funding we do is not tax deductible. So if you give the money to the city parks, so.
And just to add on to that, it's not just mountain biking. So it's a single track.
Yes.
But it's for running, jogging.
Yes.
Mountain bike. So it's not just for bikes. So it's a great,
pedestrian.
Yeah, I mean, it's.
And non-motorized vehicles, yes. And non-equestrian, so.
Mentioned how wide he's thinking that would be, because if you're going to have these other uses,
it's similar to, have you been to the parks of Alito trails over near the high school, like the access roads there? He works with a shadow trail designs that's just a standard. He probably
they're
has
about 3 feet wide.
Yeah,
they're not very wide at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's minimally disturbing the
yes.
surrounding, so it is real literally cutting a path through the brush.
And
I mean,
in some cases, just mowing.
Yeah,
like if it's the meadow area, it would just be mowing it and maintaining it mowed a couple of times a year. So,
little side note: I was reading today, San Antonio started out with an idea of a trail 20 years ago. And Saturday morning they had the ribbon cutting. They did it in sections, and they're all connected, 80 miles.
Wow.
And it started out with just one single idea 20 years ago, and it took it takes a while.
Yeah,
you
sure.
know. But this will be a good start if this becomes a protection.
Well, and that's what you know, not that easy, but that's part of the discussion that we've said we have to have where we are. You have the Parks of Alito trails to the south, you know, a really good long trail system. You have Quantahill to the north at the, so that's kind of the goal, is to keep building trails and figuring out how to connect them and turn it into a good system. So like we said, this is just we were lucky enough to have, you know, he just goes out with his phone and walks it and comes up with this map. And it's crazy.
He worked for Baird Hampton Brown?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, okay.
But this is all his fun hobby time stuff.
But
yes,
well, that's good. I just think it may also be he's got some experience in the next steps, apparently,
yes.
with VHB.
Absolutely.
He's a designer
which is fine.
For them. That's what he does. This is what he does for them.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, it might be helpful.
Yes.
He brings
awesome.
A lot of knowledge, and he's very passionate about it.
Yeah, so we're hopeful that we get some positive feedback from the Lockheed CERA.
So. What's the red one? We were talking about the yellow. Is that an existing one, or is that something he's proposing as well?
It's simply there's a bridge across the creek, part of the lake there, that
okay.
if we have to, we would have to discuss with CERA, can we use that bridge? Is that something that... If we can use that bridge to get to that area, we can develop that area too.
Oh, wow.
If we can't use that bridge, then it would be quite expensive to
okay.
construct a bridge to get that direction. But right now there is a old, perfectly functional bridge. So if there's, I don't know what the golf course uses it for.
Do you know
so.
What that bridge was designed to carry?
I have no idea. It's like, and maybe the golf course knows. You know, who knows?
Well, the only reason I ask is if they're designed to carry a car, a golf cart, even if they don't function at that load level, a lot of times they can still accommodate a pedestrian or bike just fine.
Yeah.
So,
and that would be some of the comments Larry made, is that we've done this before. We can show you places in Arlington and all over where we've used existing bridges. So. If you think that's a stumbling block, we can show you how we've done it. So yeah, I that's the fact that he has so much experience, he has every little thing, you know. Nope, we've done that before, and we can, any little thing you can think of, he knows of the situation, we'll figure out how to make it work. So it's a wonderful resource to have, and we're hopeful that we can build on this. And it happens quickly, too. It doesn't take 9 years like a flash.
Right.
So, correct.
The restrooms are due to arrive tomorrow, and so the crane will offload them on Wednesday. And so it'll be set on Wednesday, and the toys will be hooked up, and then it'll be inspected on Friday. So we hope to have the park opening and functioning, and everybody happy and able to use the restroom by the weekend.
And the park will be closed.
Oh, correct.
Because of that crane being there.
Yes.
Alrighty. And is Rose on top of that for?
Yes. Yes, I have that put in my planner for tomorrow, so we'll tell that.
Perfect. All right, we're excited about restrooms. As Cynthia said, even the master gardeners, when they're out there for hours.
Yeah, exactly, could use that.
Having a restroom, you don't have to hop in your car and go buy a cup of coffee if you need, so.
All right, phase two, Cross Timbers Park.
Is this?
Are we wanting to do both of these?
Yeah, we're gonna do.
We'd like to do, if you read both of them, we'd like to do both of them together.
Phase two and future park projects, budget costs in relation to upcoming proposed city debt.
Do you want me to take this, Bill? I kind of thought you might. So I think I mentioned earlier when Gabby was here, on the agenda for city council tomorrow is, we have proposed an issuance of certificates of obligation for funding road repair and construction. And as part of that, I'm hoping to get a little extra money for our parks. And so we did this before when we funded the playground. We did a road project, and we did road drainage, and we added parks to it. So that's my hope in talking with other council members, and we're really trying to keep the cost of that down, so I can't guarantee that we'll get anything out of it. But as part of that, what we did was look at some of the options that we had for phase two of Cross Timbers, and we talked with Pacheco and Koch to have them prepare very rough cost estimates, which I'm going to caution you. When you ask for rough cost estimates, you usually get really high. So we're looking at what are probably some very high cost estimates. I think, you know, there's always site prep that you have to do with anything, but the shade structure, what we are talking about, and I brought the copy, this is over, when you're in the playground area, there's the stone benches, if you're familiar with the playground. And what we had heard from feedback from parents and grandparents that were there with their children is they just needed shade. They were sitting in the sun, you know, during the summer, and they kind of laugh, of course, we're gonna have the shade structures up right as it gets cold if we get this project going. But the idea of putting some shade structures over those benches so that we can provide it. And of course, keeping that in with the building that we already have, everything that we've already done, so it's not just like slapping something up. What it is, you know, that she had given us was kind of a slatted wooden overhang over, not a fabric. This is far more durable. It matches better what we're looking at in that area. And so I know those prices look a little bit crazy high, but the idea is that's the quality of the park and what we have there, and we want something that's stable and lasts. It doesn't have to have the fabric replaced every 3 to 4 years. So that's what the shade structure is over in that area. The picnic table area that we're talking about is the master garden area. We had looked in a conceptual plan of having a picnic table area on the other side close to the playground. But when Gabby came through with her idea of gathering space with educational near the demonstration garden and a butterfly garden, what we said is right now that's where everybody's gathering because the shade is trees. It's already a gathering spot, which also means that, I don't know how many are deciduous, but you potentially would have that area not be as shaded during the winter, which would give you the sunshine that you want. But the idea of let's take advantage instead of building giant pavilions that are covered with tables underneath and a very small footprint of what we have, let's see if we can put some benches and picnic tables there. So that's the area, and what I had asked Dorothy with PK to look at is, it's a sloped from the demonstration gardens down to the creek. So in order to put in seating, we're gonna have to do some sort of terracing or leveling. So that's why you see retaining walls, concrete, trying to get that into a buildable area, if you will, even if it's only for benches and picnic tables. What we will need to go back and look at is we are trying to match the picnic tables and the stone benches to what we already have. The stone benches that we have, just repeat those in a nice pattern over there. What we'll have to go back and do is ask Gabby and say, we're looking at, you know, maybe if she raises around $20,000, that covers the cost of the benches and the picnic tables, that we will, as the city, prepare it so that it's done properly engineered, and she's covering the actual cost of the benches, however she. So that's what the next step with Gabby would be, to say, this is what we're looking at. We would ask you, in addition to her funding of the signs and things within the demonstration garden, the QR codes and things like that that she's talking about. So that's what that picnic table area is. Like I said, I think it's what we've talked about with Gabby is that area. We've learned how it's used now. We have children at the playground, and she made an excellent point. It's another 30 minutes of fun with your kids to cross the creek and look at the gardens and eat lunch over there. So we're seeing that that's how people are using it. It's families and little kids that are going into our demonstration garden. So we're trying to make that, we're trying to follow with that with what we already had. We had talked about in phase two some of the things of, you know, I think it's the, is it increasing the concrete walking trails to 8 feet to make them the ADA accessible? That is not in this. That's quite expensive. We had the feeling that if we're looking at something, or I personally did, and y'all can give me feedback, we have those trails now for us. We could upgrade them to 8 foot, but we're going to be taking out something that people are already using the way it is now and spending more to just make it better. And so the personal thought was, I don't know that we have the money to do that. We can get more bang for our buck with doing the other things and wait to do the trails to 8 foot wide. So I will point out that was in the conceptual plan something we had that we kind of decided that might be a little too much money for not enough change in how that park is used. There's the park entry sign. I'm going to tell you that's still crazy, way too expensive to me. And I look at that and say, I said we needed to scale it back. I think her first proposal a couple of years ago was $75,000, and I think we're still looking at, we need to get that down if we do it at all. So we'll
that's
have
our
to
see. Picnic table area.
Do what?
Like that's the whole cost of the picnic table
exactly.
area.
Exactly. And you get a sign. A sign that says Cross Timbers Park, so with landscaping and, you know, and stuff like that. So, and gosh, maybe we can just see if Gabby wants to raise money for a sign. Just kidding, I'm not going to keep adding things to Gabby's project. But finally, the last thing that we discussed, we have this whole complex, which is the Cross Timbers Park with playground and demonstration garden, and then across Ranch House Road is the Memorial Garden with the concrete walking path that a lot of people use. And again, if you watch how a lot of people are using it, they are walking in the area near Cross Timbers Park in the Public Safety Building. They're crossing over the bridge, large bridge that crosses that, and then they are waiting to cross Ranch House Road to just do another little quarter mile lap over. So the idea of just public safety, we need to potentially have a crossing there. So I think, as Corey pointed out, this is something that's like near Vandegrift on like a hawk sign that it's a fancy thing, but it's fancy because it works. It's not just a stripe painted in the road that you hope people, and that is an extremely dangerous curve there.
Downtown Grapevine too has multiple.
Yes, so
in Washington DC they use those all the time.
Yes,
those hawk lights are excellent.
Yes, so the idea being that is something that it's expensive, but it's probably the upper end of what we would do to make things safe there. But I think it's important to consider that, because our other thoughts are just putting a stop sign, which we may have to do that in addition to this. We may put it at the stop sign that does not include connecting sidewalks to that. So wherever we put that, we would potentially have to add some funding to connect to the memorial path as well as the paths over here. So that might be an additional cost in there. But that's what's in there. That's what council will be looking at tomorrow.
It's a pretty high price tag. The way I see that it will work, as the way we do council, we are going to set the, tomorrow night, we'll set the final number for what the certificate of obligation will be. And that will be picking the amount that will be spent on roads and then potential, the amount that would be able to be used for parks. We would likely be able to say, let's get some more information in on parks and have the discussion of if you allot $300,000, $400,000 for parks, let's go back and go through this list and finalize it. You know, after we've set the total number, we know we have valid things that we want to do within that. If something else comes up, you know, it potentially even say within the time frame we find that we could fund something for the trail, the mountain bike trail that potentially is not privately funded. You know, that we could work with that over in the early January, February timeframe and go back to council and say, now we want you to, this is the project we want you to do. These are the four things or five things. So that's how the process should work. So I guess I would ask if y'all have any comments or thoughts on some of the things that we're looking at. Because pretty much, like I said, this goes to council tomorrow night, so can't really change. Yeah.
What is the, on the park entry sign, irrigation?
They would be doing flower beds and such. So it's just putting in the, connecting the irrigation system to the same irrigation system that is already there for the playground area. So again, these costs are high because they're guesses. So
that's a long ways to trench through the creek, around the creek, however they do. Yeah.
Yeah. So David,
did you? Yeah, I agree with you on the cost of the sign. And the other thing is, those hawks and stuff, I'm not real familiar with it, but it sounds like it's going to be something to stop traffic. I would only recommend, you don't want to stop traffic unless you have to stop traffic. If there's nobody out there crossing, you put a stop sign up there.
Right.
It's you know, that's a real nuisance for the majority of the users, the majority of the time, whereas some of these other options may be able to only stop if we need it, or even put a yield, because, you know, if you yield, you have to yield, or you've broken the law. So
I think that's actually the
idea.
Anything
other than stopping all the time.
Right, that's the idea, is when a pedestrian wants to cross, they hit the sign, the lights go up, it flashes.
That's better.
And yeah, because that, and I may have misspoke when I said that, the other option is to put a permanent stop sign.
Right here.
At the intersection.
I don't think you want a permanent stop sign.
I don't think most Willow Park residents
want
a stop sign, but that's the idea, is a stop sign costs a lot less than this, but it's not nearly as functional.
Well, the other thing is it probably is, like you say, more functional. When people only, when they perceive a strong need, they'll be more compliant.
Yes.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely.
I didn't know what the hawks are going to do, so.
Okay.
What is it? I just figured it.
That show's just
okay. Yeah.
It's just
okay.
Yeah.
And it's like really bright.
Yeah.
Blinding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good striping on the cross.
And
we
even
got things with lights in the.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Does it also have the lights in the pavement as well?
No, I don't think it has that.
I don't know about this one, but usually you see those.
Yeah. So I think as we, you know, I think as we look at progressing with trails and using some of our roads as pathways and things like that, that's a big thing we have to consider. If we're going to have a lot of trails that we're trying to connect, we're going to have pedestrians, bikes, and cars mixing, and we need to do it in the safest way possible. So that's why that came up. That was just, I'm going to say, it was kind of out of the blue. I think PK just mentioned it, and I went, give me a cost for that. And then I was like, that's a lot more expensive than I wanted. But it's not necessarily a bad, and what we also said regarding that is it's a roads package that we're putting together. So it kind of applies both ways to say that you're putting in a crossing signal on a road, on the busiest road in Willow Park, and saying we want it to be safe, that it could be. So that's the package that I think council will talk about tomorrow. So I definitely appreciate your input here, and we'll see what I can swing.
What was the price on the restroom?
$150. Total.
Yeah, total with
total
installation.
Total.
Yeah. So
and was that what was left of our budget, our original budget?
No, that came out of city reserves.
So that did not, that was, our original budget was spent and even maybe a little over that by the total. And then the restroom was, not to go into a long discussion, but city reserves are typically available towards the end of a budget cycle after you've collected your taxes and realized that you're not having emergency needs for something, that COVID did not kill your sales tax. You build up the reserves for the year, and so that was how we were able to figure that out around, I guess it was summer when we first started talking about it. So around July or August, we were able to say we do have money in reserves, and that's one of our primary needs.
So how much money do we have in our original park budget right now?
So what was passed this year, I want to say, is $30,000 that we put, and so that $30,000 is just the annual, which is never a good way to fund projects, because $30,000 won't do much.
Right.
You know, so it won't do, well, maybe we could get a sign.
Maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance, some of the other things that we do, that's where that parks budget goes.
So we just have $30,000 in that account, or?
Each, the, this year. This year, that's, yeah. Well, it's in the budget, not necessarily in account. So that's, we had no fundraising. So we don't have anything that's been raised that's dedicated to parks. We have a budget item that when we set the budget, we said parks would have $30,000. So that is hence the reason to have it put under debt. It's because if we're going to do a project, we need to be able to pay for it up front and then pay it out over years.
We don't have to pay maintenance out of that. That's out of general maintenance, city council.
Maintenance.
That $30,000, do we have to maintain parks with that, or no, it's just infrastructure capital?
Excellent question. No, there is definitely some maintenance that's going to go into that. That's going to take care of that. Yeah,
okay.
So definitely. And how that's done, I can't quite
tell. We haven't figured out our annual maintenance yet. I think y'all are in process of
bids. The city's figuring out that, plus we have staff that works parks, you know, every week. So whether we have to hire a half full staff member, that would potentially, that would come from our budget that we set each year, that person. So still working those out as we increase our park space. So
yeah. I have a question about the demonstration garden. What's the plan? Are we going to expand that more, or are we going to just keep the size, the footprint as it is right now? Does the city have any input as far as?
We would have input, but I don't think we.
Yeah,
I think we have enough to maintain, and we're hoping that Gabby.
I don't see it growing. If you're going to rely on us to maintain it, we don't even do a great job with what we have. So if we had to cruise it, you know, it would just, you'd have to hire somebody to take care of it.
Yeah, and we've talked about that and how we can help that, but that is part of what. I'm hoping some of the connection to the FFA through Gabby will continue after she's gone, that, you know, that a little bit of labor each semester would go a long way to helping.
Yeah.
You know,
and we've talked in the past about having community volunteers, having every 3 months a little work day where community members got together and helped. But that's never quite worked out. We've had a few events that were actually pretty well attended, but
possibly the Boy Scouts or
we have tried the Boy Scouts and it hasn't worked out very well.
Yeah.
But maybe I just haven't been in touch with the right people.
It really does take that. Cynthia and Gabby and I'll discuss the idea of the kids that need volunteer hours, that need something to do, what you always have to do is have an adult or two or three or four in that organization that are willing to do it too. And then when that comes up, it's, well, those kids are all involved in something else on Saturday morning. So yes, now that was the day we picked, but none of those kids could come and or we can get kids there, but you have to manage them. And it's really, you have to find an organization that is willing to have the adults come in and manage the kids while you manage the parents in some ways when you're talking about younger kids. So it's just been a challenge. And honestly, as I mentioned, like when you get with the right people, like Gabby saying she had people that can help, hopefully that will pan out. Yeah. It works, but when you just sort of say, going to do a work day, and hopefully it just has never really worked out that people, and you just never know how people's schedule are, that that's not the band competition day. And you went, okay, well, I didn't know that when I scheduled it, but yes, that's, you know, half of the high school was there, so.
Do y'all have like a, I know we did mulch spreading one a couple of times.
Yeah.
Do y'all have a wish list that, you know, that you presented to Gabby, or, you know, just said,
well, yeah,
this is kind of what to get us going, to get,
yeah,
get us back on track, or
exactly the walkways and the mulch spreading and the signage. I actually have the signs that we Master Gardeners bought.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't gotten them done yet.
That's what, hopefully Gabby, I think that's a huge part of her project.
Well, she would, you know, she'd be better suited to it because, you know, she has the skills. I have to learn all that stuff, and so.
And she wants to, and she has to be a scholar.
Yeah.
It's a requirement, so. Yeah, I think I'm hoping, I was very hopeful in talking with her that one of the things she mentioned is that NHS requires hours, and now NHS is not allowing them, I guess, to double up. So if they require FFA hours, so those kids are looking for more. And an agricultural type project like that garden, that's just so up their alley. You know, NHS wants to do the food drives and things like that. And so that, I think those students, that it's just, I think that if we can get a good relationship going there and pick up on the next person and the FFA advisor to keep them going, that may be the group that we've always needed, is to have those, you know, these are people who work hard in the stalls at the FFA barn. So I don't think a little butterfly garden is gonna scare them away. So we're hopeful. Yeah. I was very hopeful in talking with her that we can work that out.
That's good. Good to hear.
Definitely. So, all right.
Okay, item H. Regarding discussion regarding board appointments and reappointments.
Is that me too, or is that?
You can go ahead.
In learning how we did this, fortunately it's all my memory and we're still looking for the documents, but when we formed the board, it was November 2 years ago when we reformed our board. We appointed, at that time, I think it was Marissa, Corey, and Larry for 2-year terms. And then last year, we reappointed David and James for their 2-year terms. So y'all are still serving on your term, but technically we need to open up and reappoint for the 3 terms that expire. Technically, I'm going to say if we look at the ordinance, October 1st, but we're still serving through. The city has kind of decided that we want to do all appointments for all boards at the same time to just make it easy each year. So we're looking at in January. So what we're saying now is that for the 3 of you, we would appreciate if you want to serve another 2 years, your application. We'll probably be announcing tomorrow night at the city council meeting that we'll be opening up and requesting. So that's just a heads up to y'all to submit it so that it could be voted on, I believe, in January. So that's really what we're looking at, is to just stay on top of it. That's a nitpicky thing that Leah likes to have on any board I'm on, is that we keep appointments up to date. As Betty knows, I was that way with Board of Adjustments too. So that's really what we're saying, is that we'll call it out. So we'll potentially, Tony, maybe we can email the application form to those, and just everybody, because if there's anybody else that James or David knows that they want to send it to, then we'll accept applications. So that's that item.
Consideration and action on setting date and time for next Parks Board meeting.
We'd like to recommend January the 13th,
okay.
To the first night. And I made sure we talked about it. It's not a holiday like we, as I told you on the November.
Yes.
So if that's possible, January 13th will be your next Parks Board meeting.
Okay.
And if that works from what I just said, if we reappoint, the council meeting would be the 11th of January. We're going to appoint once would be made, so we'd be appointing on Tuesday night and meeting on Thursday, just so you know how that works. And then potentially as we start those new terms at that meeting on the 13th, we'll talk about ongoing through the year, how we wanna schedule our meetings so that it works. So. All right. Do we need action? There actually has the word action. So do we need a motion to?
Motion to adjourn.
One question.
Okay.
I was looking at this stuff, this section 10.02.188. And that first letter there, A, it said lands for park and recreation uses that are unsuitable. Number one, any area primarily located in a 100-year floodplain. I'm thinking, isn't that where you often put parks and trails and things like that?
I don't want to put like structures and stuff, but yeah, definitely like soccer fields.
You would think, from what they're saying, that I don't think that that's what's in there. It needs to be be generally suitable. I think there was an un in there. We'll adjust that. Thank you very much.
Okay. I was thinking that's your primary.
No, that is.
Yeah. That pretty much is going to get rid of everything a developer.
Right.
Driving around.
Awesome.
Those are good ones.
Yes. Yes.
All right. That is an action item on next board meeting.
Yeah, so a motion to approve meeting on January 13th. We need a motion for that.
I'll make a motion.
All right. Can I second? Anybody else want to
second? I'll second it.
All right, Marissa seconds.
Okay.
So we have a motion and a second. So all in favor?
All in favor. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, I don't get to vote.
Yeah.
Unanimous. All right. So.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, we have a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Second by Marissa.
All in favor. All in favor.
All right. Thank you, guys. Let's just get this going.
Email this.